welcome to An Evening with Nirvana. It's a podcast where I talk to various guests from the Dune community about level design, map making, and content creation. Today I'm talking to Dragonfly, one of the most prolific Dune mappers you're likely to find. You may know him for some of his Kakko award-winning projects like Skull Dash and Eve Eternity, perhaps some of the many maps he's made for community projects like Mayhem, Joy of Mapping, Abyss of Speed Mapping, etc, etc. These days you may even know him as a level designer for Proteus. Welcome to the podcast, Dragonfly. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you very much. I'm quite happy to be here. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm not too bad. I have the weekend to look forward to, which is good.
Always a good thing.
Exactly. Although I feel like it's always weird recording a podcast and talking about like what day it is when you're recording it, because obviously it's already the weekend for people actually listening. But.
It's fine. I mean, enjoy what's left of your weekend. Exactly. All the weekends come if you come to this podcast late.
Also, you know, I'm sure they can figure out that I don't record it like 10 minutes before I put it up. So, yeah.
True that.
So I'll start with the mundane question, as I always do. How were you first introduced to Dune?
I would have been no older than about 3 or 4 years old. My dad used to have like LAN parties with his friends back in the day in the early 90s. So I'd be there as a little toddler, just like staring in awe as like they're all shouting at each other, like running around in deathmatch on Doom and then later Quake and such.
All right.
And later on down the line, like my dad would be trying to make levels for Quake to play against his friends on it. And I remember seeing him do that one summer's afternoon when I was bored. Look online, like, Doom level design. And it turns out, yep, there's these tools. There was Doom Builder. I can't remember which version, but it was Doom Builder 1. So I downloaded that and started making my first level before I even had a working copy of Doom on my computer.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
So that was my entrance, basically. And then, yeah, I picked up the, I think it was the Collector's Edition 2005 release, which had Doom, Doom 2, Final Doom, and the Doom 3 preview.
Oh, wow.
On the disc. And yeah, the rest is history from there.
That's a very interesting introduction to Doom, really. That sounds like the most involved I've heard a parent being with Doom and Quake.
Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, my dad is entirely to blame for me getting into the Doom scene in the first place.
Yeah. Well, lucky he was around then. So you had this pack of iWads, which I'd imagine that kind of allowed you to like bounce around between them. Did you find one that was like your favorite out of the iWads, or like what was your experience with them?
Well, when I was young, I wasn't exactly a great gamer, despite how many games I played. So Doom 1 naturally was the sort of preferential one because it didn't feel unfair.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could play on the harder, you know, like Doom 2, TNT, Plutonia, but on like I'm Too Young to Die because I was just a kid. I definitely preferred Doom 1. I found the level design in that one, it was a bit less abstract and a bit more understandable, like where you're supposed to go, what you're supposed to do, and well, until the third episode anyway.
Right. And has that opinion, is that consistent to this day, or have you found that like your opinion on the iWads has changed a bit?
How do I word that one? I feel like the common answer, I guess. Like, I prefer Doom 1's level design to a certain extent, but at the same time, like, the extra, like, enemies that are available, the super shotgun, even some of the just texture themes and stuff available in, like, Doom 2 and Plutonia are far more interesting, I guess, or they provide more interesting opportunities. As an iWad, if I was to go back and play one, I'd still probably choose Doom 1 just for the rose-tinted glasses, the nostalgia. But yeah, as a like creator for Doom maps and such and custom content, Doom 2 is the obvious choice. Simple as that, really.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And I noticed on the Doom Wiki, like you said, you got involved with editing stuff pretty early on. And on the Doom Wiki, I think the first thing you're credited with is a WAD that's basically just a replacement for the Imp. So were you like...
So this is the first time I'm talking about this like publicly, I guess, since. Yeah, there was a thread some time ago asking about like how you got your name, I think it was, and I just, or where you entered the community, and I completely pleaded ignorance to forgetting what my old username was, but someone somewhere found it. Being sausage. Yeah. Just looking around the room like, oh, I don't know what to call myself. I had a sausage for dinner. Yeah, that's my name now. Idiot. But yeah, so that wasn't really like the first thing I released. It's just the only thing that's still intact, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like back then, I made awful, awful levels.
Well,
sorry.
I suppose, well, the first actual sort of level that was listed was something called Valleys of Bereavement, which...
Oh, that old one.
It uses a lot of,
I don't think,
like,
that works anymore.
Not, well, I played it.
Okay.
So there you go. It uses a lot of GZ Doom features, like, right out of the gate. What did you... I guess, like, what did you learn from making that map and releasing it and then, like, getting feedback and stuff? What was the process like releasing a map?
To be honest, there wasn't too much thought involved. It was more I was making stuff for me. I was like, oh my god, look, I've used something that Doom didn't have, therefore this level must be great. Very stupid, naive view. I would have been, what, 12, 13 maybe? Yeah, with that level, I don't recall actually getting feedback, or if I did, it was probably like, oh my god, this sucks.
Right.
So I wouldn't have taken it too heart. But yeah, back then it was just a case of me and a couple of friends from school, like, making levels together and playing each other's levels. And to be honest, it was mostly me making the levels.
Right, okay.
So that was mostly my feedback network. And because we're all friends, it's just, oh yeah, that's really cool, that's really good, every time.
Yeah, well, that's good.
So it wasn't exactly productive, but, you know, as you get older, you get more receptive to, like, looking for feedback and paying attention to what people are saying and how to improve and stuff.
I think you need that positive reinforcement early on, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely need some of it.
I noticed that you made a couple of maps for Stronghold on the Edge of Chaos, which was like,
oh yeah,
like an invasion style ward, I guess, primarily built for Skull Tag. What drew you to be, like, working on that project?
A few things, I guess. I mean, the first one was to push myself to work with, like, the big names at the time. You know, there was, like, Vader, there was Torm. I was becoming quite good friends with Remirath, who was on the project. I don't know if they're still called Morpheus at the time or not, but Remirath was there. We're still good friends to this day. And, yeah, it was just I wanted to be part of something that I thought people were going to look at and go, wow, this is really good. And it will have my name up there somewhere and I'll feel really proud of that.
Mm-hmm.
Never thought I'd actually have the opportunity to join the project at the time, but they took me in. I made two maps. One of them is almost unrecognizable from the version of the map I made because it's completely touched up. I believe it's by Vader.
Right.
But, like, the general gameplay and the layout is still there. Like, the core theme is still there, but I'd say about 70% of the line deaths are not mine in one of those maps.
Oh, wow.
And then the other one, which is, I'm trying to remember. So, Strong STR-22 is the one that was touched up. I know that much.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what my other map was. I think it was map 12, STR-12, I think. Yeah, that one was almost verbatim as I left it. I think they just added a couple of lights and a fancier skybox to it, and that was it.
Right.
Yeah. God, it's quite nostalgic thinking back to then.
Well, I remember talking to Skillsaw about that project, because he also made, he made some maps
for course.
That. And I think he said there was, like, some drama related to it. Do you remember any of that? What was your experience working on that project?
My experience was keep to myself for the most part. I mean, back then I was definitely like a nobody in the Doom community. No one knew who I was, no one cared. And I figured, you know, all these people are better mappers than I, they've been here for longer than I have. I'll just do what I'm told, kind of thing. Like, here, you've got a map slot, make a map. Cool, I'll do that. That's fine. And that was pretty much the extent of it. I remember when it came to like them asking for people to test maps, the only feedback I really had was, most of these are too hard for me. Have fun. that was pretty much it. So I don't really remember any drama because I just think I sort of checked out after I'd made my maps.
Right. Yeah, probably the way to go with a lot of community projects.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, Stronghold was kind of interesting. I think I remember coming across that project when I was probably like 12, 13 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe a little bit older, but I remember finding it and just like not understanding how to play it at all, but I just flew around the maps in the editor and like thought, and I was like, wow, these look really cool, but I have absolutely no idea how to play these. That was my experience with Stronghold.
When you say no idea how to play, was it more like when you say how to play, like how to survive the maps?
No, like I couldn't even get it to work because I think it had like a hub and stuff, and I was totally unfamiliar with ZDoom features and all. I think I'd just gotten ZDoom or something, and I was just like trying to figure out what the hell was going on. And I think it only worked in Skull Tag, right? It didn't actually work in ZDoom.
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. I'd have to check the wiki or download it myself, but that sounds familiar.
Yeah, I think it's Skull Tag or GZ Doom. And I think I couldn't get Skull Tag to work. And I was like, well, it was impenetrable to me. But I remember being very impressed by like the visuals of it and thinking it looks really cool.
Yep. I mean, I did a lot of that in a lot of maps. A good example would be Sunder. I've not played a Sunder map to completion, maybe not past the third map or fourth map, but I've definitely flown around all of them and been like, wow, look at all the pretty things.
Yeah.
Less a technical sense of impenetrability, but still there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, I often just fly around maps in the editor, like if I don't have time to play something, but it looks really cool from the screenshots, I'll just fly around and poke around a little bit and see what looks cool in it, you know, sometimes steal some ideas.
I'm sure we're all guilty of that, for sure.
Definitely. So let's talk a little bit about Skull Dash. Where did the inspiration for Skull Dash come from?
Probably my eternal love for those 90s collectathon games. You know, your Mario 64s, your Banjo-Kazooies, Donkey Kong 64, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Running around, collecting everything you see that's just shiny and spinning and stuff. I don't know, that is fun to me. I know that general style of game has sort of died out entirely at this point.
Sadly.
Yeah, sadly, I agree. But yeah, I absolutely loved that kind of game and kind of wanted to bring that into Doom.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it was the 10 community projects in the ZDoom forums. I made a map for that. It was quite well received at the time. And then I wanted to make another map, so I made a secret map with a bit of a ZDoomy gimmick, which was essentially the beta version of Skull Dash. It was like the concept. There weren't like special tokens or anything. It was just the main token. You had to collect, I think, all of them. Or it might have just been 75%, but to get the exit unlocked, it's the same sort of gameplay ultimately, but the map itself is bloody awful. It was definitely a rushed job. But that got the concept down, and I really wanted to like take that concept and run with it a bit more. And that ended up being a 7-year long project.
Jeez.
Over the course of, well, pretty much my entire, like, I guess you'd call it high school years, although here in the UK it's secondary school. Like I would have started it in like the first or second year of that, and then I wouldn't have released it until way after I'd left. It was a good fun concept to work with. It was a different way to look at Doom entirely.
Yeah, for sure. And as like, I'm also a massive fan of those games. Like Banjo-Kazooie, and Tui are like two of my favorite games of all time. I love them so much. And despite how janky Donkey Kong 64 is, I also really like that game a lot.
I mean, the jank is just part of the experience at this point, right?
I think so. The speedrun for that game is very funny because that game is insanely broken. But
I'm just going to swim through a wall. Don't mind me.
Yeah. But yeah, it is really breaking. Sad that they're just not a thing anymore. Actually, yeah, something that I specifically wish they would bring back is that style of game. And I wonder if they just, the industry got burnt out on them, you know, because in that PS1 Nintendo 64 era, that was like literally every game that was released was sort of that kind of game.
Yep. Yep. Good. I mean, like all of the like big memorable titles are that style of game to some extent. Like the closest thing we've got this day and age are like Zelda Breath of the Wild or whatever the new one that came out is, but it's not really, you have to collect things, but it has that same adventure sense to it.
Well, there's still like Mario Odyssey, like Nintendo still does put out a Mario game that that does fulfill that, and Mario Odyssey is really good. Actually,
it is a fantastic game. There's no way on earth I'll have the time to 100% that one, though. I keep going back to it every, I don't know, 6-9 months, playing for like a week and then being like, yep, I give up.
Yeah, there's tons of content in it, which is great.
Yeah, exactly.
There have been like these little nods to Banjo coming from various places. You know, they got put in Smash and little things here and there from Xbox and stuff and on Twitter, etc. So I'm praying, you know, for a proper Banjo-Kazooie release that is not nuts and bolts.
Yep, nuts and bolts didn't happen. We won't talk about that.
Yeah, it's the... It's the Terminator 3 through 6 of video games.
Yeah, absolutely.
So back to Skull Dash, though. What was what was the process like for building a Skull Dash map versus building a regular Doom map? So I'd imagine it was quite different.
At its core, it wasn't too different. But quite often I would look at a level that I was working on and say, does it really need this objective in there? For example, collecting a key card or pressing a switch to unlock a door. And quite often I'd look at this and go, okay, this bit's good, but how would this play in deathmatch? And I found that like trying to gear some of it towards a sort of deathmatchy style sort of helped it flow better for the sake of running around collecting coins and having different routes you could take to try and get a more optimal like run through the map.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely wouldn't suggest putting those maps into deathmatch, to be honest. I think most of them would suck. But from like a single player perspective, I guess like a lot of the time there's almost always two ways you can go, if that makes sense, like two directions, except in maybe some of the earlier levels. I don't know. From a mapping perspective, it's kind of hard to actually put into words, really. It was more about just creating interesting spaces with, I don't know, various height levels and sight lines and stuff, rather than trying to create a guided experience like you would with a normal single player map, which tries to tell the player, this is the way you maybe want to go. You should go in this sort of direction to get the weapons that you need to go for that direction, or find the key cards or what have you. I don't know. I remember when we opened it up for the expansion, which took another 2 years after the release. People just seemed to get the idea straight away. I didn't really have to explain to people like how to shape their maps and do things. Like most of them just worked straight away. So I guess, I don't know, if people wanted to make a map, they'd probably get it straight away. I'd hope.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose like the objective is the driving force between, because the coins are sort of laid out in a way that presents the direction you need to go anyway. So I suppose a lot of it, it informs the player naturally, which is nice.
Yeah, I did have like an internal rule where there had to be at least one fuck you coin, as I called them,
right,
in the map. One that's just in a bit of an awkward place to get to, or is hidden out of sight quite well.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to actively look for it, just so the 100% felt like it had to be earned. But yeah, most of the coins should be obvious. They should be easily locatable, but not necessarily. I didn't place most of them with a route in mind. I found like scattering them around quite a lot, most like in an almost random way, helped create these routes that the player can then come up with to like beat each other's speedruns and stuff, which was quite fun.
Mm-hmm. As an aside, have you played Jump Wood by Rubix and Grain of Salt?
I'm going to say probably not, unless it was on some Skulltag or Zandranum like lobby some time ago. I don't think I have played it, I must admit.
Okay. You should try it out. It's very good.
I'm making it that
collecting
now.
Things. It runs in Boom. Well, MBF.
Oh, it's Boom.
MBF 11 is the compound.
Wonderful.
Yeah. It's very cool. So what was the, I guess, like, what was the testing process like for Skull Dash? Because I feel like, to me, this seems like a project where you could get quickly very good at, like, the specific gameplay that's in it, and then maybe be a little bit at odds with casual players trying it for the first time.
I feel like I'm a good test bench quite a lot of the time, because, as I've said before, like, I'm not the best at the game by any stretch of the imagination, so I do view myself like the average, like, casual Doomer, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of the testing was just myself for Skull Dash for a lot of the time. It was just play the map. Did it feel enjoyable? If no, why? What particular parts like impacted that, and what could be done to sort of like push that in the right direction? Mm-hmm. There's one map in particular which felt awful, but I loved the theme. It's like the Haunted Mansion level in the second episode. And for some reason, I never liked the way that level played, because everything was like just a bit of a gotcha. Like there's shadows, which was those realm 667 enemy, which are like basically invisible in that darkness. And then there's specters and stealth monsters and all your Z-Doom gimmicks.
Right.
But I felt the reason it sucked is because you just, if you lost health, it felt like it wasn't your fault half the time. And then because it was originally made to be a Skulltag project, I dropped in the fix for the solution was to drop in the rune, which is basically vampirism, which like you get your health back after hitting the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
After I placed that one, suddenly the map felt fine. I didn't mind getting jumped in a sort of unfair way because I could just shoot them in the face and get my health back. And it made the map feel so much more enjoyable. There's a lot of examples of that around, like, the whole, like, project, where maps feel a bit better just because of one small change.
Yeah.
Which are sort of stuff that I wouldn't normally have done elsewhere, I guess. Like, using runes from Skulltag is an odd one. There were some maps which I thought were fun in concept, but then, like, after making the full level, it was just like, yep, this is awful. Delete. Like one of the bosses was you get a berserk pack and you're in a boxing ring and just had to punch an enemy to death who's trying to punch you to death. Thought it was kind of funny, thought it was interesting and gimmicky. Once I actually made it, played it a few times, I was like, this sucks. Why did I spend all the time making the textures? There was also a secret map where it was just a 50-50 divide. It was a coin flip every time. So like there's two doors or two switches or two pathways and you had to choose one. And by choosing one, the other one gets locked out. Right. And like the coins, there's some ACS scripts basically determining which side the coin was going to be. And it was different every time you played it, which made it suck because you could never reliably play that map and win. Like there's every possibility that you're just going to lose. So yeah, that map got scrapped because it just wasn't fun. There are some maps I'd go back and do that to now. There's one map in particular, to Hell and Back. It's just a linear, like, sort of hell map, I guess. It's really, it just doesn't have any interesting gimmick to it, aside from the theme. It could easily be done, you know, so much better now, but the past is the past. Sometimes it's good to look at your mistakes and go, yeah, I'm better than that now.
So, well, I think sometimes you just have to release things as well. You can't just consistently go back and change everything. Even if you'd want
to. Definitely.
So I think you mentioned the expanded edition a little bit. What made you want to sort of open it up for the expanded edition?
So around that time, I was quite active on Twitch as a streamer. I kind of miss those days, but I'm not interested in being a streamer anymore. Just don't have the commitment for it. But around that, I built like my own Discord community, and it was quite active, quite friendly. And a few other people who were there were quite interested in making their own maps for Skulldash once it was released, which obviously just opened up the idea of making a community project for it. So, yeah, a couple of questions lead to an entire 2-year stint on expanding the project. Let's make more maps.
Yeah. Often I feel like these multi-year projects do just stem from like one idea you have right before you go to sleep or something.
Definitely. Yep. Like, in a similar vein to like the Skulldash Expanded Edition coming from just community interest, there was Zizzy01's Confinement 256 project. It's kind of in the title. You make maps where the playable space is just 256 by 256 map units. They'd basically done the whole project already and released it, and then put it on Doomworld, and as soon as that happened, people thought it was a community project and started posting their own maps straight away.
Right.
So it went from this 20 level like mini megawad to this, I think it was 52 levels in the end. Just this behemoth of a wad with like shitloads of people's contributions, one of mine included. And then myself, Bull, and Zizzy like compiled it together, and that was an interesting time, actually, that one. But yeah, I do like the way, you know, someone just says something dumb on Doomworld, and then next thing you know, there's a community project centered around it or what have you.
Yeah, it's cool to have like an organic like community project that just grows like that just because people actually want to make maps. I don't know. I feel like sometimes community projects are a little bit more. People are like, yeah, I guess I'll make a map.
Exactly. Oh, I'm doing nothing this weekend. Yeah, I could make something. Why not?
Yeah. It's like filling the slots with a little less enthusiasm, maybe. And then they drag on for, I don't know, 10, 15 years. I don't know what the fair estimate is for a Doom community project these days. But
I mean, it's one of those. It's like anything, isn't it? The first 90% takes 10% of the time.
Yeah.
Then the last 10% is the rest. Oof.
Unfortunately true for a lot of CPs, I think.
Definitely.
So I checked out Nightlife, and I thought the gimmick for that was pretty cool. You made that for the Vine Source mapping contest, I think.
That was the one, yep.
Yeah. And I guess I just wondered what, like, was that an idea that you'd sat on for a while and then you were like, oh, this is a good opportunity to use this, or did you come up with that specifically for it?
It's something I'd done before. There was a secret map in Skulldash. It was the fourth bonus map, if I remember correctly, which takes place in the nightclub. And using ACS, I'd synced the dance floor's lights and some of the other lights around the map to like pulse and change colors to a MIDI of Darude Sandstorm.
Of course. Classic, yeah.
Of all things. I'm such a meme. Oh, dear. Yeah, so I'd already done that. And that idea was born from my father again. Me and him used to run this mobile disco together. And he would be the DJ. He'd play all the music. It was usually weddings and birthday parties and such. And he got all this light equipment and like set it onto Sound to Light. And he didn't like the way it just didn't actually like play with the music, if that makes sense.
Right.
So he went full turbo nerd, made his own software to control the lights, and then like sat me down and said, you know, have a go at this, what do you think, can you test this out? And then he saw I was quite good at being synced up with the lights, and then that became a weekend job for me where I'd be using his software to control lights to music for 4 or 5 hours as we played like a wedding venue. Easy pocket money, and then obviously doing that most weekends, kind of hard to ignore the influence that has. So yeah, definitely brought its way into Doom, did it there. And then when the competition came around, I was thinking, what can I do that I know nobody else is going to do? What could possibly stand out from the crowd? Kind of a shame I went down this route because the map itself sucked. Like the map around the lights is, I think it was about 10-20% of the actual mapping time. The rest was just writing the ACS, syncing it to the song. But yeah, that's where the idea came from, was just how can I stand out in a contest context.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting though. Who knew child labor could bear so much fruit?
Right.
I guess speaking of, we talked a little bit about community projects before, and mm-hmm. you've made a ton of maps for community projects over the years, like Abyssal Speed Mapping Sessions. You had a bunch of maps for them, as well as Mayhem and the Team Rocket Speed Mapping Project.
Yeah.
What sort of draws you into a community project? Like, which ones interest you the most?
Good question, actually. I think in general, what draws me to like community projects is lower commitment, if that makes sense. So rather than feeling like I've got to make this whole thing as good as I can, it's got my name on it, so I have to, you know, do it justice or any of that nonsense. I'm just making a map for fun with other people.
Yeah.
And that sort of lightens the load a bit and makes it easier to just jump in and go, yeah, I'm just going to put some lines down. Let's have some fun.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what projects attract me, quite often it's who's already taking part.
Right.
Not always. Sometimes it's the idea itself is very interesting. There was one. Which one was it? I actually can't remember his name. I'm going to hit the Doom Wiki right now. But yeah, the Mini Dido that was hosted, where you make a chunk of a map and it gets put in. I thought that was a great idea. I can't remember if I ended up making anything for that one or not. I don't think I did. I'm not sure.
So what do you...
I did.
Oh, you did. You made so many maps you don't even remember.
2018, I made 52 maps. I think it was one map a week.
Wow.
Yeah. I've definitely slowed down since then, but yeah, there was a time where I'd made so many that I couldn't remember what I'd done 2 weeks ago. It was too much. Way too much.
That is a lot of mapping. What do you think makes like a successful community project then? Like, and which ones do you think tend to fail, having so much experience making maps for them?
Presentation is a big one. You know, you could have the best idea in the world, but if you write three lines about it in a Doom World post with no show of hands, if that makes sense, like you're not starting by going, hey, I've made this map for the community project, this is an example of what I want us to do.
Mm-hmm.
You just say, hey, I've got this idea, go make a map. It doesn't instill like enthusiasm in me or other people, I guess. Like, it doesn't even have to be the most unique idea. It could just be another 1024, like, congestion type community project, and a lot of people will be interested because it's just a fun way to map. It's something to do. But you definitely got to present the idea so it entices people better, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. I've definitely seen a lot of community projects that have, like, exactly what you're describing, where it's some new user coming in and they just post, like, a couple of lines. No pictures, no map of their own. And then they're surprised when people are like, well, I'm not going to make
it. Why should I do this?
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, you were talking about making 52 maps in 2018. Do you have, like, what is your process for mapping, you think, that allows you to create so much? And also, like, what is it that allows you to sort of start and finish a map? Because I feel like a lot of us can begin a map, but sort of being able to complete things over and over again is a talent, I think, of its own.
So that problem that you're describing is something I have when writing MIDI music. I can write a riff or an introduction to a song, and then suddenly I'm completely dry. There's nothing left in the chamber. I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
But with maps, I find quite often just drawing a random shape is enough to then stir on the next bit of progress, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah,
I don't do layout first mapping. I tend to just map the final, what will likely be the final room immediately. So let's say I wanted to do a jungle map, and I start and play off in a cave. I will do the entire cave before I've really done the next area at all. But while I'm like dabbling around detailing and stuff, the detail might inspire places the player could go. Like, oh, the way I've shaped this makes it really awkward, but I could tidy that up by putting like a staircase here, which leads into a new direction. Just random like ways of manipulating the map, like get inspired by the detail, I find. And that then becomes a layout as the map sort of grows around itself. Generally, I try to, like, say while I'm working on a room and I'm doing like the detail and like the wall decorations and what have you, I'll probably be thinking about what should be happening elsewhere in a map while I'm doing that. Like, I find the art phase of a map is kind of autopilot for me at this point, so I'm not thinking too much about how to make this look as good as I can or whatever. I'm just sort of going through the motions, making it look how I feel it should look in my head.
Mm-hmm.
But while I'm doing that, I'm thinking about a later portion in the map or a encounter idea. Like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if you had a room with demons that get already killed? They come in on conveyor belts and then a bunch of archviles run into the room. Yeah, that'd be a great idea. I don't know where in the map that's going to go. I have no idea, but I've thought of it now, so I'm going to commit to that.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, okay, the idea could be terrible, and then I change it, but I now have a room that I can work with or what have you. I find, yeah, just not worrying about it, going with the flow is kind of the way things get done, really.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely agree with a lot of what you're saying, like in terms of having like an encounter maybe to work from, like anything, even like a pillar that looks cool or like some piece of detailing that can be the centerpiece for a room, or even like you said, yeah, a lot of the time just drawing shapes on the grid and having something there that isn't negative space is like just a really good impetus for actually like creating the next part of the map, I think.
Yeah, like a good example of just doing something because I want to do it and then finding a layout for it afterwards. Eternity map 27.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the Heaven episode ones. There's this like giant marble structure in like the center of the map crossing over the entire map. I did that first. That's the first part of the map I made, was a giant structure. I had no idea what's going to be around it, underneath it, or anything. It just sort of happened. Mm-hmm. And before going any further, I then made like the player's start area way off to the side, like this faux 3D, like, I don't know what you'd call it, actually, like a sort of Greek temple type looking thing.
Mm-hmm.
I made that and then was like, okay, I really like what I have here, but it's not playable. How do I make this playable? Like, that's the way I tend to do things, really.
Right.
Just make a bit here and a bit there and then stick it together and try to make the gameplay between it make sense and the flow feel good. And if it doesn't, sort of iterate until it does.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I feel like it works most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And with Eve Eternity, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. What was the original impetus for creating Eve Eternity? I read that Otex had a decent amount to do with it.
Otex is the entire reason, honestly. Akira, I believe it's through Doomworld. They reached out to me with a DM just saying, hey, I've been working on this texture pack for longer than I probably should have been. I'd like some, you know, well-known mappers to try their hand at it. And I just happened to be one of the few people who responded straight away with, yeah, let's go. Got chatting on Discord. I made map 01, which is, you know, the first map in the entire project. I think it was in 2 days. I just played around the textures and I was like, I really like this texture pack. Mm-hmm. I want to do more with this. And he's like, please, by all means, make more. Go for it. So I made like a follow-on map. So I think I made map 02 immediately after. Fun fact, half of that was built in a McDonald's.
Oh, wow.
On a terrible laptop. But yeah, it was definitely OTEX that was the driving force. It's just I thought I wanted to experiment with these wonderful new textures. I'm quite honored to be one of the first who get to use it. It was originally going to just be like those two or three maps that I made, and I was going to leave it at that. But then I'd look through the texture pack and it's like, oh, but I really like the way the tech textures look, so I'm going to make this tech base. And then,
right, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you know, we could do some really good hell stuff with this marble. Oh, I need to use this, I need to use that. And before you know it, there's a whole project forming around it.
So were you already drawing up like episodes and like based on the different themes you wanted to explore pretty early?
Quite early, yeah. So like it obviously started organically. I was just making maps for the sake of it. That sort of dictated what that episode was going to be later down the line. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I made a couple of maps, really enjoyed it, wanted to find more ways of using it. And then I think it was within a month of having the texture pack in my hands, I was like, ah, fuck it. Let's do a whole megawatt. Let's go. We can do this. And once I've made that decision, it was okay. So how is the megawatt actually going to work? What's going to be the way this works? Well, I'm obsessed with Scythe 2, so let's go copy the way they've done it. Episodes of five maps with different themes that are completely irrelevant to each other.
Right.
That'll work. That's fine. That way I get to explore six different themes and mini sub themes within that and play around and see what happens from there sort of thing. And I'd always wanted to do Heaven, like what after I'd done the, like there's an angel boss in Skuldash.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And I feel like because it was just a boss, the map didn't really explore the theme much. So I wanted to explore that theme a lot more fully and had done for a while. So that was an obvious addition, which then, much to Akira's difficulty, became a lot of extra texture requests from my end, which he was amazingly kind enough to like oblige and create for me. Then we eventually, after realizing a lot of progress was happening quite quickly, thought, oh, we could get this done in time for Doom's 25th birthday, which enlisted the help of a few other people to make that like deadline possible. Oh, that was such a... It was a speed run of making a megawatt, basically, because the whole thing was done in 9 months.
Right, yeah, that is really quick.
It makes remembering the order in which things happened and where decisions were made a bit foggy, because it all sort of, in my head, happened at the same time.
Yeah, right. I mean, it started off as the solo thing. Like, when did other people actually start coming in? Like, I know Skillsaw was kind of just approached of
yep.
one map kind of thing. But what
yeah, it was exactly that. So I primarily wanted it to be my project because I'd already committed so much to it. Obviously, Akira being the other 50% because it's his textures was the idea.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, once it was decided it was going to be a megawatt, it was like, okay, there's no way I'm going to make 32 maps this quickly, as much as I'd like to try. Who are some people that I would like to work alongside? Let's see if they're free. Put out feelers, reached out to a few people. Those who got back like quite quickly were obviously welcomed into the project. It's like, okay, here's this spreadsheet that we've got. There's always map slots. Pick and choose one, maybe two, and have a go at making a map in that theme. We'll, you know, push and pull a little bit to like make sure you're on the theme or make sure it's not too difficult for the stage it's in, the WOD or whatever. But most people nailed it straight away, pretty much.
Right.
Some maps were very last minute, like handed in. Skillsaw's map, for example, I believe was in like the last month or couple of weeks of the project before it was released, before we got the final copy.
Mm-hmm.
Another one was Stormcatcher's infamous map 19, the one that goes on for like an hour on your first time playthrough.
Yeah.
Fantastic map, in my opinion. I genuinely didn't have an issue with it being as long as it was, but I did feel it was a overstaying its welcome just a bit compared to the other maps in the project. Ironically, the map immediately after it, map 20, was called Convolutes because it was the longest map in the project at the time. Right. It's half the size. So,
I mean,
that's an interesting one.
I feel like you have maps in a project that are like that, and then people become entrenched in their views, and it becomes their favorite map or their least favorite map. But, you know, it gets people talking, gets people
exactly
riled up.
I wouldn't change it for the world. Yeah. Had he like provided the map sooner, I would have maybe suggested like cutting it in half and making it two maps. But we only had one slot left for the map. We couldn't find another slot in the episode because all four other maps had been made already. The only thing I probably would have done is, you know, at the midpoint in the map, sort of slice it. You'd still need the rest of the map there because you can see it all from all over the place. But if it had that breakpoint in the middle, I feel like it wouldn't be as much of a hot topic, which might not have been a good thing, thinking about it long term.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I don't know. Who doesn't love reading angry id Games reviews?
Oh my god. There was one guy. Wow. Yeah, this one person on Twitter who was so upset with one of the fights that I'd made in the Hell episode that he said he would rather insert a drill up his ass than play anything I ever make again.
Well,
and yeah, sorry, I was so tempted to print that out, put it on a frame, mount it on my wall and keep it for life, but I didn't. I should have.
That was my ultimate.
I was quite proud of that.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. No, don't be. It made my day.
You mentioned the boss fights in Skull Dash and also the boss fight in Eve Eternity. What do you enjoy about boss fights? Is this something that is carried over from other games? Is this like from the collectathon kind of games with their boss fights and things? Or what is it that makes you sort of want to put them into Doom?
There's definitely an element of that from other games, yeah. I quite enjoy playing MMO RPGs and having that like half an hour long raid boss fight with like 30 other people and then finally overcoming it for the first time makes you feel so good. I don't think any of my bosses have quite hit that mark, but when there's this seemingly like insurmountable task ahead of you, like a big boss fight, mm-hmm. and you eventually come over, like overcome it, I think that's one of the best feelings you get in video games. And I find bosses are a good way to sort of implement that. The only thing is, I don't think I'm the best at designing boss encounters. So hopefully in a future project, if I do feel the need for a boss fight, I'll come up with more exciting ideas that don't overstay their welcome. Because the last thing you want it to be is like a big meat shield with just one attack cycle.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I think it's difficult in any FPS. Because of the, I guess, you know, the hot phrase these days is gameplay loop. But just of the fact that, you know, you are just pumping bullets, the screen becomes very static in a boss fight because, you know, generally you're facing one target over and over and doing the same thing. So I think shooters are the most difficult kind of genre to make engaging boss fights in, personally. So, you know, it's a tall order, I feel like.
I definitely agree. I feel like the boss encounter in Eternity, which was essentially all of Antera's 031's work in terms of like the dehacker and decorate, I think that's probably just about the best boss fight I've played in Doom that doesn't make like excessive overuse of like Z-Doom features, if that makes sense.
I was
very impressed when they put that boss down and said like, here, look, this is what I've made, it has this and that feature, and then we were like, oh, can we get a second phase in there? And it's like, oh, let me see how that works. And then we get the second phase where he goes stupidly fast and becomes this insanely scary threat. When I first saw that in Doom, I was like, oh my god, this is it. I love this. I fucking love this. So it's definitely not an impossible task. I just don't think my mind is geared towards making the right bosses. But it definitely does come from other games, as you said. Like the collectathons, always having a boss at the end of every level, and like MMORPGs with their raid bosses and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Definitely a fan.
I guess I was also curious with Eve Eternity, how come you decided to go with Doom compatibility for it? You're usually, I feel like, a GZ Doom kind of guy.
I'd say I'm more a Boom kind of guy now, for sure. Times change, I suppose. Basically, originally I wanted to keep it simple when I was just testing out the textures. Primarily, I just wanted to put some lines down and see how the textures look. I don't want to get bogged down on all these extra features from GZ Doom that, you know, don't necessarily make a map better up front. And by doing that, I kept more in tune with just the architecture of the map, the way just the raw gameplay works and things like that. And then obviously Eve Eternity grew into this whole project. So if a couple of the maps are already Boom format, it's going to be Boom format or MBF mm-hmm. in the end. I think for me, a big, big draw of Boom now is, like I said, you're not overwhelmed with features. You're not feeling like you have to experiment with new crazy ideas that no one's done before. People don't mind as much with Boom if you're doing something that has been done before. And there's definitely a wider play audience for it as well. It's more accessible. More source support supports the features. It's mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of appeal. There's a lot of appeal for Boom, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a good point. Well, MBF 21 also these days are pretty exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very excited to see what's possible with that. I know Zace's Vespa is a good showcase, but
mm-hmm.
it's the only one that comes to mind at the top of my head at the moment. Though I must admit I haven't been as in tune with the Doom scene the last couple of years, so maybe something slipped past my radar.
Right. Well, you're talking about being this big Boom guy now, but what about Elementalism? How'd you get involved with that?
Elementalism, so that was, I don't know if you'd recognize the name, but Fade, spelled with a PH. They used to be a member of my Discord community.
Mm-hmm.
And they started making this map, and it's just like all the other things. You say one thing, and then it goes from one map to an entire project.
Yep.
They're like, oh, I wanted to make a water episode. And I was like, oh, how about a fire episode? How about an earth episode?
Yeah.
So on and so forth. We splintered that off into a separate Discord and got a few people interested and then started making a project. And it was really just it was kind of like a self-indulgent project. It was, you know, how far can we push the visuals? How far can we overdo this particular thing? What interesting showcase can we do? The total opposite of what Boom's about, basically.
Yeah.
I was essentially like the co-founder of the project with them and like motivated them into making it this full exciting thing. Then Bull joined the project and they have been absolutely instrumental to its success. Like everything they've done has helped the project tenfold. Mm-hmm. During the time that this was going on, I started making Eve Eternity. And once I'd gotten maybe 3-6 months into Eve Eternity, I was like, okay, yeah, I don't have time for both. I'm really sorry, guys. Here's what I've got so far. Do what you want with it. I'll keep in touch. And yeah, so I occasionally would test it. I'd give a bit of feedback here and there, or I'd say, you know, good job, everyone. This looks really good. That sort of thing, like trying to encourage people. But I wasn't putting down lines for it anymore, which is a bit of a shame, I guess, but I definitely needed the spare time.
Yep.
So that's kind of how the project was born. I'm insanely proud of the work that everyone on the project has done since. Kind of honored that my name is still up there when I've only really got a map and a half in the project. Which is nice.
I mean, a map and a half, still a map and a half.
Exactly. It is something. But yeah, so, I mean, part of the reason I had to sort of bail on the project was because I was in discussions with Jason from the Proteus development team about Proteus.
Mm-hmm.
And I said at the time, you know, I don't want my projects to fall to the wayside. But then I had a serious talk with myself, so to speak, and realized there's no way I can do all three of these things, being Elementalism, Eternity, and Proteus. Something's got to give. So Elementalism, unfortunately, was the choice to drop.
Yeah,
because it seemed quite self-sufficient without me anyway. I feel like I made the right decision there, all in all.
Mm-hmm. And I do feel like Elementalism, I can imagine you being drawn to it because, you know, the theming of those maps sort of feels a little collectathon-y. It has, like, some big, like, major, like, points of interest in the maps, like those old collectathons did, and then, you know, the elemental theming, very common mm-hmm. kind of thing. Like, I remember Banjo-Tooie had, like, the fire and ice worlds and, like, a desert yep. and, you know, stuff like that.
Definitely, I might not have been as conscious to the influence there, but it's, again, definitely the same thing, and the RPGs that I play again as well, you know, you're elemental stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like the four, well, you know, like the six elemental gates that you go through and stuff. Yeah, there's definitely influence from other video games, definitely of the sort of 90s and early 2000s.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned Proteus. I feel like you keep helping me segue into the very next thing I wanted to talk about.
Somewhat intentional, but also intentional. It's just the timeline of things, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I try to keep it simple for people. Very chronological here at the podcast.
So we like it.
Yeah, so talk to me about getting involved with Proteus then.
That one was entirely unexpected on my part. I'd been following their Twitter page for a few months, I imagine, at that point. Liking a few posts and just, you know, enjoying what I'm seeing. Nice to see, at the time, another boomer shooter coming out. One that seemed very much rooted in Doom's sort of core ideals, if you will, I guess. I'd say around that time, the boomer shooter, air quotes, I'm not a big fan of the term, but it's the one everyone uses.
Yeah, right.
That genre was not as oversaturated as it is now. Mm-hmm. Definitely didn't feel like there's as many people in it. So it still felt quite exciting to me to see this happening. And that was the extent of it. I just liked a few tweets. I never messaged, never did anything. But Jason sent me a message on Twitter saying, "Hey, I've seen that you are a Doom streamer and level designer. I quite like the way I've seen you like work on this and stuff. I was wondering if you would like to test our game and also maybe have a look at the level design tools, see what you think of it." He wasn't looking for someone to work on the game with him at the time. He was just looking for essentially for feedback and to see what the community interest would be like.
Right, yeah.
And I said absolutely, because, you know, it was kind of exciting to get my hands on a really early copy of the game. So we sat down Discord call. So yeah, we sat down Discord call. I streamed my screen. He gave me a little bit of a like introduction, said, you know, play the game. I'm going to say absolutely nothing, but feel free to pretend you're on one of your Twitch streams and comment the same way you would so I can get your train of thought as you're playing. Played through it. Really enjoyed what was there. It was the map Excavation for those who've played Proteus, but a really old copy of that map.
Right.
Like, that map's gone through so many iterations, it's impressive. Like, a good 50% of the map feels very different now, I'd say, but for the better. But yeah, I enjoyed the map a lot. I said some things that were like, oh, this bit here, bit jank or whatever, you know, honest feedback. Same way I would if I was reviewing someone's Doom map, for example, to try and help them. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, he's like, thank you very much, appreciate it. Would you like to go on to the level editor? And I was like, I would love to. So yeah, we did a bit of that. He showed me like the basic hotkeys and the way to work, and then that was sort of the end of it. I went away, played around with it for a couple of weeks, came back and showed him this room that I'd done. He was like, oh wow, so you've really got on with it. What do you think? And I was like, I genuinely love these tools. Some things take a bit longer in here than they do in Doom. You know, if I wanted to just draw a room, I can't just draw a box by right-clicking four times and call it done. It's not as quick as that.
Yeah.
But then if I want to do room over room stuff, all these complex shapes, it's insanely easy in this. There's no way I could do this in Blender or anything else as quick. I don't know how to use those tools remotely close to this. And if I wanted to do this in Doom, it would take me weeks. And they were like, okay, this is good feedback. This is useful. Like they asked me, you know, what tools are missing that would help and things like that. Got discussing on that. I carried on messing around with the level editor in that time and then sort of showed it to them. And they were like, okay, yeah, no, we really like what you're doing here. And eventually offered me a place on the team. I can't remember what the original agreement was, per se. I don't know if I was contracted for just the one level or just to do a certain amount, but eventually I was basically contracted to create a certain amount of gameplay time. But they were very strict on not wanting me to artificially inflate the gameplay time. So, you know, I could have just built an arena map that just respawned monsters all day, every day. And been like, oh yeah, thank you, thousands and thousands, please, for that, because it lasts for, you know, 6 years. obviously it had to be good gameplay, and obviously there'd be feedback cycles and iteration on the maps and stuff that was included in the contract. But yeah, basically I was expected to produce a certain amount of content for the game before the early access release, and that's what happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'd imagine you would want to make good quality stuff anyway. I mean, it's tied to your name, and you probably just want to make stuff you'd enjoy playing, so.
Exactly, and it's my first, air quotes, professional outing as a level designer, I suppose.
Yeah.
Which obviously made me feel like I've got to put my best foot forward, but it also made me very, very nervous, because it's always just been a hobby that I've done for myself, so if something didn't go right, I didn't have to care. Like, people could say the most awful things to me. I'd be like, that's cool. Thanks for enjoying the free content I gave you. Bye. Can't do that with a paid video game. So I felt like I had to, you know, actually do a good job. And imposter syndrome kicks in so hard when you're in that situation. It's unfathomable.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like, how did I get here? I'm just... in my head, I'm just a kid making video game levels for the fun of it. I'm not a professional. Obviously, I'm an adult now, but I still view myself in that sort of light. Like, I'm not a pro. What is this? Which does cycle on itself and get you into some weird mental holes, but you can work through it. You can work through it.
You keep flashing back to that improv placement word, like, it's still me. I'm still that 12-year-old.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So, what kind of outline did they have for the game? Like, what were their strictures for the maps? Like, specific things that they wanted, you know, like this many objectives per map, or, you know, how loose was it for you?
When I first joined, there was basically just do what you want was the task. Mm-hmm. There were some core values in, like, the aesthetic that they wanted me to adhere to. Best summarized in one word as thick. They didn't want lots of itty bitty geometry and like fiddly bits of architecture. They wanted big, chunky, thick industrial stuff. That much I knew at the start. But it was around the time that I joined that the game's storyline and plot was still in formation. They didn't really have any of that in stone at that point.
Sure.
So they sort of had to retroactively make the map that I made work in the storyline, which was it was one of the acid maps, like the nuclear green sludge type maps that I made.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point we didn't have like the map where you walk around to get to the different levels and stuff or any of that sort of stuff planned out at all. So Jason had to basically look at my maps and go, how can I make this make sense next to this map and that map, and what order should it be in? And it was very much a sort of free-flowing, off-the-cuff kind of development for that phase, at least. There wasn't strict plans, there wasn't strict themes. It was quite loose. It was quite nice to be part of, to be honest. Because it definitely helped shape the direction the game went in. Maybe not intentionally, but you know, my mapping and conversations helped come up with ideas and such, which was nice. I must admit, working with Jason was a lot of fun. He was a very good mentor, essentially, into working in a more professional environment when it comes to level design. He was also he helped me learn how to delete chunks of maps and do it again, which is something I'd always struggled to do before.
Something I learned, I feel like, quite well, at least a little bit more recently in my mapping, is like sometimes you are just better off deleting stuff. Like the final map of Fractured Worlds, I took like I had this part of the map that I hated for the whole time I was creating it, and I kept trying to iterate on it and retexture it and stuff, because it needed to connect a whole bunch of different themes, so it was like a bit of a challenge. And then in the end, I just ended up, right as I saved the map and called it finished, I was like, I can't, in all good conscience, leave that part in. And I just deleted the whole section and then rebuilt it from scratch. And I built it in like maybe 2 hours, and it was exactly what the map needed. So,
you know. That's perfect.
Yeah.
I've had a similar situation, but not intentionally, where I was mapping. And the whole time I was working on this, I just didn't have the right feeling about it. I didn't like the things I was making while I was making it. And then a power cut happened right as, like, within 5 minutes of me wanting to save. Like, I was getting to that point where I was about to go, you know what, I'm done, I'll save, I'll finish, come back to this.
Yeah.
So I lost everything I did.
Oh, man.
Came back to it a few hours later once the power cut was ended. The end result was 200 times better than anything I'd done before that point. I was so happy that the power cut happened, because I know if it didn't, I'd have left the old shit, like, terrible work that I'd done beforehand in place and just rolled with it. So, yeah, there's definitely merit to having chunks of your map go missing, either intentionally or otherwise.
Yeah. I think I do a, like, a soft delete, though. I do prefab stuff, and then I hold on to it, and then, you know, if I want to use it for something later, I can, but...
Yep.
Sometimes it's the best thing. Just get rid of it. In terms of Proteus level design, what do you think are like the key features of building a level from a design perspective? Like, what aspects of Proteus's gameplay are you trying to promote when you're building a map?
I think my answer to that question would be different now than it was when I was working on Proteus. And that's because more features arrived in the game after I'd made most of the maps,
right?
Such as the double jump and the air dash, or like the boot dash type thing that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of those were features when I made my map. They were loose concepts that we'd thrown out there. We hadn't like discussed it much. We just said, oh yeah, we'll probably have a double jump. That was it. So I would definitely play on the movement mechanics of the game a lot more were I to make more maps going forward.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also probably lean more into like the newer weapons and the newer monsters, building like encounters designed for that bit of equipment that wasn't there before. But yeah, I do think one of Proteus's like big selling points is its large arsenal. I feel like anyone who wants to go in and make custom maps should play around with the different bits of kit and see what interesting fights they can make, because things like the grenade launcher is really good fun, or like the plasma rifle with its alternate fire. Like, you can shoot it onto an enemy, it puts a tracking dart on there, you can then run around a corner and just keep spraying them,
yeah
and the bullets will curve around the corner,
really
like
cool
things like that. I didn't really have the opportunity to design around those bit, like mechanics and bits of equipment as much as I would have liked to, but when it comes to making a map, I'd say it's no different from making a Doom or a Quake map, really. Obviously you got the full 3D freedom, so more verticality where possible would be good, just because that makes for a fun level, in my opinion. But yeah, it's not too far detached from making a Doom map, really.
Mm-hmm. And were there any specific things from Doom that you used as inspiration for Proteus, or that were an inspiration for, you know, the original, like, development team?
It's impossible to say no to that question. There's definitely Doom influence all over the place. I don't have any specific examples in mind, but yeah, there's of very obviously Doom influence in like the style of the game, like the enemies you encounter, the way the levels were designed. Like you've got someone who's been doing Doom mapping for like 15 years on the team making levels. Of course, there's going to be Doom influence in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did try to be a bit more 3D with my work than I would be in Doom. But then that's just Quake influence. It's all there. It's definitely all there. I don't think I took any specific maps from Doom as inspiration, or like the Doom community at large. I tried to be unique with what I did. And a couple of the levels were built off of like Jason's work in progress, or like napkin sketch sort of ideas. Like the train level, where there's like a sniper tower.
Oh yeah.
They've got these rail guns that sort of like scope in on you, and like you see this big laser trying to find you. That was entirely his idea, and I bloody love that, because that's nothing. I've not seen that in Doom in a way that's conveyed in a similar sense, with such like big thick lasers, like sending this really imposing, like scary sort of sense of dread into the player. Where you've got to play it more like a Metal Gear Solid map than a Doom map sort of thing.
I thought that was kind of broke things up a little bit gameplay wise as well.
Yeah,
something a bit different. Are there like other Doom projects on the horizon for you in the background, or are you more looking for game dev outside of Doom? Like, what's your primary focus, I guess, for now?
So, after early access for Proteus was released, I hit this bit of a low point in life where I had too much pressure from too many angles and had to just cut things back and sort myself out and enjoy myself a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So Proteus did unfortunately sort of get dropped at the time. So since then, to be honest, I've put so much more time and effort into just enjoying my time with friends, playing video games, doing things for myself, like working on my health, or making some art, doing a bit of painting, playing old video games that I never would have had the time to do with all these other projects on the go.
Yeah.
So at this specific point in time, there's nothing on the horizon, like nothing specific. You reaching out to me did prompt me to maybe dabble with some lines, so I have doodled in Doom Builder, but I don't know if anything's really coming of that at the moment.
Yeah.
I don't know about the logistics of it, but I would love to do another Team Rocket somewhere.
Uh-huh. Yeah, maybe a community project or something. Hours. Yeah. A good way to slowly lean back in without committing yourself to like a megawatt or something.
Exactly. Like I have dabbled time since like Evertonity in Doom stuff. So we've had like the Team Rocket projects, we've had a lot of community project submissions, Mayhem, Joy of Mapping, Abyssal Speed Mapping Session. How can I forget that? We're not going to talk about the titles of my maps for speed mapping sessions. that's not there. What I have been working on recently, and probably I'm closer to release ready than I think I am, would be more MIDI music.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sitting on about 30 work in progress tracks, I think it is.
Oh, cool.
I just don't know how many of those I can push to completion, because, as I said earlier, like I can come up with one idea, like a riff or a melody or something, and run with it for about a minute, and then I'm just like, I have no idea how to continue this without it just being boring and repetitive. If I can work past that, there'll be more music from me at least.
And these will be sort of standalone MIDI projects like Cacophony and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the idea of releasing them as albums.
Yeah.
Something fun about it, and having the opportunity to make an album art for it is kind of fun to me. So.
Yeah. It's kind of unique as well, because I feel like there are definitely people who have released sort of packs and MIDIs and things for the community, but I feel like a lot of the time the MIDI comes along with the map and it's attached to it, but yeah, it's a little more rare for just a selection of MIDIs to come up as like an album or something, at least for the purposes of Doom anyway.
Well, that's kind of the fun of doing it this way, is because I'm making it albums, I don't have to make it for Doom. So like a fair few of the like tracks that I've written, just I'll be impressed if someone can find a viable home for it in a Doom context. Like some of them are really, really chilled out, like piano-centric pieces. Other ones are just outright stupid. Mm-hmm. I could only see them making sense in like a really gimmicky speed map or something. I don't know. I mean, I'd say at least 50% of it's kind of doomy in nature, but yeah, it affords me the freedom of making what I want to make rather than having to make it for Doom specifically this way around, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you are finding maybe a bit of a better balance, which is good. Definitely something that yep. I've struggled with recently as well, so I could definitely empathize with that. I guess this leads us into the final question. Not really. It doesn't really lead us in. Like, it's not a good segue, but I'm going to force the segue to occur. what is your favorite Doom monster and why?
My favorite Doom monster and why? Ooh, that's tough, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I'm going to say probably the former human.
Wow.
The little zombie man.
It's a good pick.
And yes, I don't use it as much as I should, to be honest with you. I like it a lot. And that's because it's the harmless guy, you know, the one that everyone sort of scoffs at. It's not a threat. I don't worry about him. But in the right context, he can really stand up and fuck you up, you know? You know, get 100 of those in there, zero armor in the map. You'll feel it. You will feel it. And equally, there's nothing more satisfying in Doom than running through a long hallway filled with those to the brim with a rocket launcher in your hands, just guts spraying everywhere. Like,
it's true, yeah.
That's, you don't get that in many other video games, or at least you didn't, you used to. There's something really satisfying about that experience, which is why it pops up in a few of my maps. Just zombie man hordes, rocket launcher in hands, definitely something I enjoy doing. I'd say that's my favorite.
I think this might be the first time it's been picked, so I'm excited.
Nice.
I actually get a lot of satisfaction putting them in maps. I don't know why. They're just fun as, like, they feel like free extra content as a mapper, you know? They're like,
yeah.
You put them in and it's like, well, this isn't gonna, I don't have to do a bunch of rebalancing of the area or, like, deal with, like, some difficulty changes that are gonna occur in this encounter, because they don't, they're really just there as, like, extra things to kill a lot of the time.
Exactly. And they give back the ammo that you would have used to kill them, so, like, you don't have to worry about ammo balancing or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Assuming you chain gun them or pistol. But yeah. It's, yeah, they're a great little unit.
Yeah, they're a good
sometimes
populator.
Surprise you.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just, yeah, sometimes they can really surprise you.
Yeah. They make a space feel a little bit more full, I think. But they can definitely surprise you. I think one of the most watched clips from my Twitch channel was Stardate 2067, I just beat a really hard fight, and then I came through a teleporter and I got killed by a zombie man. Just one pop. Oh,
I had like there you go, health. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I just wasn't ready for it, and he just killed me. It was brutal.
That's what it's about, you know? He's the underdog. Sometimes he gets the win.
It just good. Feels so BM when you die, though, because it's just that little that little pop noise, and you just can't believe it.
It's good fun. It's good fun. I mean, those are the memorable moments, right? Sometimes, you know, like, I've died to cyber demons more times than I can count. It's not a memorable moment anymore. Whereas eating shit from a little former human, I'm going to remember that. That's always funny.
Exactly. Yeah. Definitely. Well, yeah, good choice. I like it. And that'll wrap us up. Thank you so much for coming on. I know scheduling this was a little bit difficult. You're a busy person. I'm also fairly busy these days, so we slotted it in a very specific hour of your day, so I appreciate you making time for this.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on. It's been great fun.
Yeah, well, hopefully the excitement of it all has really made you pumped up to map again, and we're gonna see, and I think I can confirm this now, Eve Eternity 2 coming out next year, correct?
Sorry, what? No. It's been a long-standing meme. Like, a lot of people are like, Everton TT win? I was like, it's not happening. And then I jokingly said on stream at one point that AD79 is going to make it. And he said, only if you buy me something. So I was like, I'm going to buy you a Happy Meal.
That's not a bad deal.
Yeah.
It ties back into the original lore of the map being made in the McDonald's as well. So it's perfect.
Yep. So if you want Everton TT, go talk to AD79 or, keep waiting.
I'll supply a PO box in the comments section for Happy Meals to be sent.
That'd be perfect, actually. Thank you. Yeah, then I won't have to pay for it.
Yeah, exactly. Community funded by Happy Meals.
Exactly.
Well, yep. Thanks again, Dragonfly. Great having you on.
You're welcome.
I'll let you get out of here. And to everybody listening, thank you very much.
Smashing. Take care.
Also, big old shout out to Pixdrift, still the ultimate doom god of the group. So yeah, thank you, Pixdrift, once again. Great job.